Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Our first guest today is the inimitable Jeff Goldblum. You know actor Jeff from his unforgettable roles in blockbuster films like Jurassic Park, Independence Day, and more recently, Thor Ragnarok. But once a week for the past 20 years, jazzy Jeff Goldblum has played a jazz piano with his band, the Mildred Snitzer Orchestra, at gigs at a Los Angeles club. And now he's released his debut album, The Capitol Studio Sessions, on Decca, featuring guest stars like Sarah Silverman and Haley Reinhardt. The Capitol Studio Sessions is out now. Jeff, when did you start playing piano?
Allison, I started to play when I was, 10-ish. I grew up in Pittsburgh with four of us, and our parents, my dad, the doctor, Harold, and my mom, Shirley, gave us lessons. I took to the piano a little bit, and that's when I started to play. I wasn't the best student in the world. I had some facility for it, coordination-wise, but I was undisciplined. I didn't know how to practice in between one week's lesson and the next, and Tommy Emmel would come over, and I'd be burning with shame, and he'd say, "You didn't practice," and I'd say, "That's right, I didn't, I'm sorry." But until he got a couple of years into it, after I played some scales and a couple of, got some chops up a little bit, he gave me a piece with syncopation in it, this thing, Alley Cat, Alley Cat?
Mm-hmm.
You do?
I took piano lessons for a very long time.
You did?
And my shame of how I practice was my piano teacher lived across the street.
Oh, my God.
She saw us playing kickball.
Oh, no.
On Alden Road.
Oh,
she was
wow.
Like, did you practice? Allison. Birdie Johnson. Still there.
Birdie Johnson. Where's Alden Road?
Glenridge, Montclair, New Jersey.
In New Jersey. Wow. I'll be darned. And what happened? So then you played for years, and you still play?
Occasionally.
What do you play?
Not well. It's whatever I play.
Really? But you like to play. You have a piano in your house.
I do. Do you?
Yes, I do. I got a.
This is your interview.
I got a couple. Yeah. So anyway, so he gave me. So how do you know Alley Cat?
I think just from those things.
Can you
that
sing
come
it?
Like, I know.
It goes da 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 da. Do you know what movie they used that in? In one scene. Oh, this is trivia. This is too hard.
Can I have a clue?
Yes. Yes. Brian Doyle Murray had a part in it. Also, Melora Walters had a part in it.
Oh, man.
Also, now I'm going to get closer. I'm going to give you better clues. Also, David Letterman had a little scene in it.
Oh, what is it? Just don't
David Letterman
tease me
said,
any longer.
"Buy my monkey, buy my monkey." And here's the title role was played by Chris Elliott. And he was the cabin boy.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's not where I was going.
Oh, really? Where were you going?
Someplace completely different.
Really? And at one point, Chris Elliott, cabin boy, is being humiliated. They're playing Alley Cat on some record, and they're throwing beer cans at his head, and making him dance. Anyway, so anyway, I played that song, fell in love with jazz, and then sat and figured I'd sit as long as it took to learn to play that. And that's when I got a little better. And then I started to get jobs in cocktail lounges around Pittsburgh. But this is around the same time that I'd already decided to be an actor as a career. But I was playing for fun. Mm-hmm. And then the story goes that I went to New York and got into acting, but kept a piano around, snuck it in a movie or two or a play or two, and then 30 years ago started to play out and about with real musicians, and have been doing that whenever I'm not working for the last 30 years. We currently have this residency at Rockwell, if you come out to Los Angeles. And then I was promoting Thor Ragnarok about a year ago. Gregory, in London, I was on the Graham Norton show. Gregory Porter, the great Gregory Porter, was promoting this Nat King Cole album. And they said, "Oh, he's going to be on the show with you. Do you want to play piano? Just him and you. And you can accompany him doing this Nat King Cole thing, Mona Lisa." I said, yes. And I played. And his label, Decca, and the great people there, Rebecca Allen and Tom Lewis, saw it and said, "Hey, maybe we'll do an album with Jeff." And they talked to me, and that's what we did. And so we have this album coming out called Jeff Goldblum and the Mildred Snitzer Orchestra, the Capitol Studios Sessions. We did it at that famous Capitol Records building, you know, in Los Angeles. And Larry Klein, they hooked us up with his producer, Larry Klein. Do you know Larry Klein?
I think I do.
Yeah, well, he's a great award-winning producer.
Yeah.
Spectacular guy. And he saw our show and said, you should do it live at that place because we could get good sound and it'll capture the spirit. And we got great people, our ordinary band, our regular band with James King on the saxophone and Kenny Elliott on the drums and Alex Frank on the bass and John Story on the guitar. Did I mention everybody? We added to it Joe Bagg, great organ player, and Till Brunner is a great trumpeter who's on our album. And then we have singing guest singers, Imelda May, if you know her, Haley Reinhardt sings some songs, and Sarah Silverman and I do a little duet on it. And that's the album, and it's out this week.
There's a lot of banter with you and Sarah. Pitter-pat.
You heard the album?
Oh, I've bopping up and down 7th Avenue for the past 2 days.
You did?
Yeah, and it makes you bop.
Yeah.
It makes you want to kick up your heels. Like Gene Kelly style, sort of, as you listen.
Really? Do you dance too?
Not well, but I enjoy it.
Oh, that's so sweet. I'm so glad you like it. Yeah, I get a kick out of it myself. And Larry Klein thought, hey, I like what you guys are doing when he came to see our show. Mm-hmm. This is jazz, and it's not insubstantial, and it's not cheesy cabaret stuff, but it also has a fun, like it used to be or it is here and there, in ways that I miss. It's really fun and lively and spontaneous and has something in it.
I have to unpack a lot from that answer.
You what?
I want to unpack a lot. There was a lot in that answer.
I like that unpacking business. When did that phrase in the news business start to proliferate? Because it sure has. I hear people, because I watch a lot of news. I saw you, as you know, on the news. But this unpacking business, you weren't saying that 10 years ago.
No. I think it's because the idea that there's so much put into one space that you need to separate so that I know if you're unpacking your suitcase, oh, here are my shoes.
Yes.
Here are my socks. Not everything is squished because it's been in the overhead or underneath and it's all gotten thrown together.
That's right.
So we need to unpack it one piece at a time.
And you and I are both, humble students of tidying up too.
Yes.
And anti-clutter. And interested in the, the dangers of hoarding, too.
Of keeping too many things around.
So anyway, let's unpack that. And they do something else. There's something else before we go on. You know what people say these days? And this just happened recently, but now it's everywhere, phrase-wise. They start an answer with, so. Have you noticed that?
Yes.
When did that happen? And what does it mean? So you'll ask me something. I'll say, so.
It's a transition.
Yes, of course.
I think people think it's better than
Yeah. So I was. It's as if. Well, let's pick up the conversation. So
you caught me mid-action. So
yeah, something like that. It used to be as a consequence. So it used to be only used or most commonly used. Well, yeah. I'm here in New York, so I may as well see some theater, right?
Yes.
You know, as.
David Sedaris was here about an hour ago.
You're kidding.
And
I knew I was feeling some vibration that I was delighting me. I love those Sedarises, all of them.
All of them. And he had a whole list of words he's banning.
Hey, that's what I was getting at. And I've begun my list. I didn't even know about that.
Yes. Well, we won't unpack it. Let's just.
No, I'm not banning unpacking it. I like you saying
let's just. I just want to say this. I just got a text from the control room. I have a little box here where they can talk to me.
Yeah.
This is terrific. Quintessential Goldblum.
Uh-oh. You know, that reminds me, I was talking to Ben Stiller, not to drop names, I was talking to Ben Stiller, I think he said it ironically about himself, maybe not, you be the judge. I said, Ben, I loved when you did that, I mentioned some moment or something. He said, oh yeah, that's vintage me. Vintage me.
Yes.
What's Quincy?
I'm so. No.
You're so.
What was it like to grow up in Pittsburgh? Because Pittsburgh is somewhat of a sort of a hip, more cosmopolitan. It's a foodie town. The university is doing incredibly well.
Nowadays.
Yeah. What was it like when you were growing up there?
I have a feeling it wasn't so much that. And I saw my piece of the elephant, you know, the elephant's trunk or the tail, because I didn't get around to everywhere. I left when I was 17, before I turned 18. I grew up in West Homestead, a little suburb. And it was, I had a great time in it, really. There were woods, you know, it's deciduous. Is that the right word back there? Mm-hmm. It's a different kind of plant life than out west. And there's lots of woods in Pennsylvania. And I love tramping through the woods. I read books about Daniel Boone and Davy Crockett. And I loved it. And my friend and I would play all kind of stuff. And we'd go down to the athletic field and play sports all day. And I went and saw Roberto Clemente play at Forbes mm-hmm. Field. In those days, my dad and I had season tickets to the Steelers games. I saw every home game that they played back when they had never won a game. And then I had some talent for drawing, and I took special art classes in Carnegie Museum.
Oh, wow.
Which had the biggest collection of dinosaur bones then, maybe now still. Mm-hmm. I would go through this great museum and go to my special art class on the weekends, and my dad would pick me up. That was absolutely magical. I went to this camp, Chatham Music Day Camp, that opened that outside my school and kind of provincial neighborhood opened me up to a whole bunch of other kids and other kinds of instruction that was great. My mom would take us to see ballet when the Bolshoi Ballet would come through Pittsburgh. We'd see real theater. One of the things that made me fall in love with that, we were exposed to the arts. My parents would drive to New York City and come back with cast albums and playbills. And like that, we'd do that. And so I went to this camp and fell in love with acting there and decided to be an actor. And then, Carnegie Mellon University was mm-hmm. part of it. I went to these courses between 9th and 10th and 10th, 11th grades. And that was, I just was deeply in love with that campus and everything there. And this is in, you know, the mid 60s. So now this takes me, the early part of my life was in the 50s. I was born in 52. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine Pittsburgh and the culture and the world and America in, and the suburbs in the late 50s when I was that age, the age of your son. And then in my teenage years, my hit puberty, and Woodstock was happening. I had two older brothers, and it was just kind of fantastic. And then I came upon this acting life and creative life just as America was hitting 67, 68.
Wow, so the world was blowing open.
It certainly was. That second year that I went to, I was falling in love with acting, and I remember the morning that Bobby Kennedy was killed, and there were a lot of people in our school, in our camp, who were working on that campaign. So it was very disturbing and enlivening.
You wanted to leave, though. You wanted to leave Pittsburgh.
I wanted to get out. Yes, I did. I had this. Well, I wanted to stay there, actually. I applied to Carnegie Mellon University, and they turned me down. And I had to scramble around and somehow went to New York City. My mom helped me to go look for schools, and I had this interview with Sanford Meisner. And he took me on at the Neighborhood Playhouse. And as it turned out, once I went to New York, I realized that it all happened happily accidentally. And being in New York on my own was the best thing. And I wanted to get out of, what did I want to get? I mean, I was glad that I was there. But when I was in Pittsburgh, yes, I wanted to go to that school. But yeah, part of me was dreaming of romantic and far travel, either outside in the real world or inside myself in some way. I wanted to go places. And anyway, found myself in New York. That's what happened.
It also sounds like your parents were sophisticated people.
That yes,
they wanted to invite in the outside world. If you're describing Pittsburgh in the you know, late 50s, early 60s, they could have just said, no, we're here. But they brought New York to you through soundtracks, and they clearly let you explore all kinds of things.
They certainly did. And I know what I was going to go. I got, you might have noticed in the middle of my excitement, I was like, I drooped for a second because I was going to say something, then I forgot. That's what made me droop. I realized I was going to say, not only did they go to New York and bring back cast albums, but movies, cinema in Shadyside and Squirrel Hill and Oakland, there were art cinema houses. And they would take me before I was ready to see them to see the year it came out. I Am Curious Yellow, if you know that movie, and Elvira Madigan, and art movies, and foreign movies, and sexy movies, and adult movies. We saw Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf before I knew.
That's saucy.
Well, that's saucy and quite adult, you know. But it gave me a taste for something. And then, of course, those years, speaking of Easy Rider's Raging Bulls, you know, that's when we saw Easy Rider when I was, you know, 15, 16. And so it was kind of a great, perfect time. But yes, my parents did. They were great and eye-openers and, you know, they introduced the world to us. That's right.
We're speaking with Jeff Goldblum. He's got a new record out called, it's your debut jazz record, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Capitol Studio Sessions. Yeah. So you come to New York.
Yeah.
You're thinking, I'm going to be an actor, but God, I love playing the piano.
Yeah.
Was that a difficult decision for you about whether or not to pursue music or stage?
No,
or
it theater? Was never even a decision. No, I had it in my crazy brain, such as it is, that I wanted to be an actor when I was 10, I got this idea, I think, and just held on to that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but always loved to play. And it's sort of a little bit of what my life is like now. I still am a dedicated student of acting, and I feel that I'm on the threshold of some of my better things, I feel. And I'm glad, I'm thrilled, I'm wildly, continually grateful to be doing that. And have become the actor that I've been able to become. But I play every day. My days are changed and wouldn't be the same without music. And I get up in the morning and I play every single day with a discipline now that I didn't have before early on, but with a thrill of it. And I play better every day. And now this life I have that's, you know, out and about, and now with this album, and we're about to go to Paris and Berlin and play some gigs there in London, is just thrilling to me. It's really fun without never having had any burden of career strategy or hopes or identity baggage with it. Just really passion.
That's got to be incredibly liberating.
Yep, it is. It's liberating. And it has kind of cross-trained me and bled over to some of my more challenged parts of my my hat rack. You know, acting for one, you know, I got to make my mark. Or I knew early on I had to make a living at it. And so each job really is a test to see if you're going to continue. So all of that, you know, it's gotten naturally on its own. Thank goodness, better. I've figured out how to do it, what I want to do, and things have gone nicely. So it's fun now. But still, even still, I feel that this music endeavor of mine makes it more free, liberated.
When did you start playing out in L.A.? How did that residency come to be?
Well, here's what happened. I did a movie called Buckaroo Banzai long before you were born in 1983.
Love Buckaroo Banzai.
Oh, you do? Oh, thank you. And Peter Weller plays the horn and likes jazz. And he used to get together at my house with me, and we'd go through the fake books and play some songs here and there. And then he got it in his mind. He did a movie with Woody Allen, in fact. And Woody said, "Oh yeah, I know Jeff from Annie Hall. You guys should do what I do, have a weekly gig, play with great musicians, and you'll get better, and it'll be fun." He came back. He knew somebody who had a place that we could show up in. We took on a wonderful guitar player, and we started to play. That's how that happened. And then Peter went off, and he directs things and lives in New Orleans and St. Bart's and teaches art history and many things. But I kept this core group, and whenever I'm not working, and for the last 30 years have been doing it. Yeah.
My guest is Jeff Goldblum. We're talking about his debut jazz album, The Capitol Studio Sessions, which is out now. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll hear some tracks. You're listening to All of It. We'll be right back after the break. You're listening to All of It. I'm Allison Stewart, and we're back with Jeff Goldblum and a conversation about his debut jazz album, The Capitol Studio Sessions. Let's talk about the choice, the selections.
Okay.
For the recording.
Do you know some of them? Are you a fan of jazz?
As soon as the Cantaloupe kicked in at the top, that's one of those songs that you think, this is going to be my personal soundtrack today.
Really?
As I walk down the street. Do you know that sound? Like, it's kind of got that
Yeah.
A little bit of swagger step.
I know. Well, Herbie Hancock, you know, I love that riff that it starts mm-hmm. with. We kind of do that.
Yeah.
I'm crazy about it.
Let's take a listen to Cantaloupe Island, the first track on the album. That was Herbie Hancock's Cantaloupe Island, performed by Jeff Goldblum and the Mildred Snitzer Orchestra from the debut album, The Capitol Studio Sessions. So, Jeff, why was that the opener?
Well, you know, Larry Klein saw our show. We were already doing things, 50s, 60s, Blue Note stuff, but many other things. He said, for this record, I think maybe, and we all started to talk, and John Mastro, too, who's wonderful, he's been the band manager and mm-hmm. kind of director, we all kind of talked, and Larry started to have a very clear idea about what songs we should kind of focus on, and then we recorded them. I don't think we had an order in mind. Maybe when we recorded it, mm-hmm. that night or two, we did Cantaloupe Island early, but that all didn't kind of find its order and way until Larry started to mix it. There were a few songs that we recorded mm-hmm. that are jettisoned from the album, a Thelonious Monk thing or two, and just because it just became clear and creatively obvious that that might have been something good to start. That was his view. Anyway, everything he did, we heard it and went, yep, really good, really good.
The vibe is of a live club. Did you recreate a live club at the Capitol Studios?
That's what we did. We went into Studio A and B, for people who know it. You know, those are some of those places where Frank Sinatra and the Beatles and, you know, recorded. Mm. And we turned it into, you know, production designed it a little bit, turned it into a club so it could recreate, because all we've ever done is this live thing, which is now a half, you know, fun, spontaneous hangout and jazz jam. And that's what he wanted to do, and he said we should get it and have it really be spontaneous, and that's what we did. And people showed up, and you know who showed up the second night? Stevie Wonder.
Oh, hey.
Stevie Wonder.
How do you go play the piano when Stevie Wonder shows up?
Well, he didn't stay. He was having his wife. We came to know him a little bit. My wife and I went on this cruise, this Paul Allen cruise, some time ago, and he was the alum, along with other very interesting people
that
I'll tell you about. Stevie Wonder was the surprise guest performer. And he was just totally thrilling. I got to meet him for the first time, having adored him my whole life. Talk about soundtrack. I played for once in my life on a 45 over and over again when I was a kid, and you know, all of his songs. Anyway, met him, and he was so sweet to me. Have you ever met him?
I've never met Stevie Wonder.
Oh, my God in heaven. Jeez, I saw him play once. I was in Los Angeles in the early, mid-70s. Around the mid-70s, I saw Gil Scott-Heron live at the Roxy on Sunset Strip, and Stevie Wonder was there and sat in on drums for a song or two. Anyway, I met him, and he was very nice. We've gone to a couple of birthday parties for his daughter, and I've been here and there. Anyway, his wife was going to come, and they were having something or other, but he dropped in, and he said, hello, how about that?
That's great.
Yeah, I know.
Sort of feels like you were doing the right thing. It was the music gods telling you, go, Jeff. Go forth and play.
Well, just being on the planet at the same time as him means we're doing something right. It's a somehow gracious event.
We're speaking with Jeff Goldblum about his new jazz album, The Capitol Studio Sessions. And the name of your band is the Mildred Snitzer Orchestra. She's a real person, correct?
She was. Yeah, she passed away a little bit ago. She lived to be 100 and some.
Of course she did.
Three or four. Yeah, Mildred Snitzer. She was a friend of the family's in Pittsburgh. A friend of my mom's. She used to come over and was a kind of a ahead of her time lady. She would exercise, get down on the floor, and do a lot of things. I hadn't seen her since I'd left Pittsburgh, but when we started to play out and about, and a few years after we started, we were asked to do the Playboy Jazz Festival at Hollywood Bowl. And before then, we'd purposely been kind of under the radar, we just want to play, and that's it. And they said, well, we got to put a name in a program. And I thought for a moment and said, well, I like that name, Mildred Snitzer, and orchestra. I said, we're not an orchestra, but that's a funny kind of joke. And we called ourselves that, and it's kind of stuck with us.
It's a great sounding name.
You like it?
Well, you know, you kind of get a vibe when you say Mildred Snitzer. You kind of, you know, you're going sort of back in time a little bit.
Yes.
Because there's only people of a certain vintage name like Mildred and Edna, you know?
Yeah. I love names. Edna, I'm dropping mental breadcrumbs. Yes.
Yeah.
Mildred,
sort of
yes.
That, it evokes a certain era, I think.
Yeah, Mildred. Yeah, Mildred Snitzer.
The whole enterprise has a very loungy feel to it.
Yes.
Not loush, but loungy. Like sort
loush.
Of.
What's loush?
Loush is when you're sort of, you know, the kind of drunk guy with the bow tie loose who's kind of loush. A little bit leering. Whereas.
Loush. Really? I never heard that.
Yeah.
Loush?
Loush.
Does that describe the mood or him, the character? He's a loush?
No, it's an adjective. It's like sort of.
Oh, that's very loush. It's kind of.
Right?
That guy's getting kind of loush with you. Was that guy? I was across the room, but I think he was getting a little loush with
you. Sort of a loush environment. Whereas.
Oh, it's a loush environment.
Yes.
I never
more
heard
like that.
That. Really?
Am I using it correctly? I am, right? L O U C H.
L O U C H. Luge.
So
I know
maybe that's
luge.
Where lounge. I mean, it's probably the
oh, there's lounge, loungy,
the Latin adjective.
Loush. I know louse. I know a louse.
Not that.
And luge. What's luge? I think that's an Olympic
sledding sport.
Oh, that's sledding. That's the luge.
Yes.
Loush.
Yes.
Wow.
I think lounge, but it's loungy. There's a certain like lounginess about the sound. And when I saw the artwork, I was not surprised you were wearing a white dinner jacket.
Oh, thank you.
It just
you.
Felt very right.
Really?
Did you think about what you wanted to wear? Even if we didn't see it, did you think about what you wanted to wear?
Yes. Well, we filmed some of that when we recorded it. But I didn't wear that when I was doing it. I wore, you may see some of the footage here and there. I had some kind of blacky tuxedo on with a black ruffly shirt maybe and a bow tie. But these days I like to think about what I'm going to wear. And then we did that photo shoot from which that picture is taken. And I thought a lot about what I wanted to wear for the photo shoot. I like to get my picture taken these days. Isn't that stupid? But I like to look at this. You like this corduroy jacket?
I do.
I've been looking my whole life for a corduroy jacket like this. I've thought about a corduroy jacket, and I've had ones. I've thrown them away. This is it.
Where'd you find that?
Saint Laurent.
Oh. We're speaking with Jeff Goldblum about his debut jazz album, The Capitol Studio Sessions. Did your mom work in radio?
Oh, yeah. The legend has it, yes. But I think that was after we, all the kids, left the house. Yeah. I wasn't around, and she must have done a little bit of that, yeah.
Before her time.
Before what? After my time.
Oh, before her time. I mean, women on radio.
Oh, before her time. Well, yes. Well, you know, she was she had latent and unexpressed potential in her. She had these four kids starting when she was 19 or 20.
Wow.
Yes. Whoa. And she had a prodigious life force and a wit and a verve that, you know, could have been expressed in all sorts of ways at another time. And I think about that and the power of that and her power. And it interests me greatly.
It's interesting when we think about our parents as humans, not parents.
Yes. Well, especially now that I've got kids, you know, it certainly transforms your idea of them, you know, but... Yeah, isn't that something? No, she was interested. She was, speaking of sewing machines, she would make things all the time. You know, there were crafty, domestic crafty things, but she was always brimming with something. She was, I'll tell you, she wanted to be, well, she was in a play. She was in came from Weirton, West Virginia. And she was in a school play. The story goes, and she played an old woman, and there was a scout. Who that could have been? What kind of person from New York City who came, saw her in the play, said to her mother after, she must go to New York. She must be an actress. Her mother said, absolutely not. No, no way. And that was the end of that. But her dad had made her some steps with her name on them. Shirley Jane Tomelis was their last name. Shirley Jane steps, and she'd do her tap dancing up and down the steps. I'm sure like a million other women, but I think she had a lot of things. So maybe after we left the house, yes, I think she wanted to go back. She did go back to school. She became, also the legend has it, I have no real experience when I wasn't around, she became a sex therapist. Yep. And then she did something on radio. She talked on the radio. Yep. How about that? And she taught me how to fight and defend myself. I was having trouble at school with some kid with David Schwartz. He was kind of giving me a rough time or something. She said, Jeffrey, sometimes she'd call me Jeffrey, here's what to do. I have a punch idea for you. You have to go, oh, David, put up your hands like this, like you're just kind of going to do nothing. And because they'll be ready that way, they'll be poised. And then when he least expect, you got to get him. Get him when he doesn't expect it. And I said, well, okay. So she said, practice. We practiced a little bit, some martial training. And I said, well, there's a problem, though. Is he going to be at school this Sunday? Yeah. I said, there's a problem. He's always with this other kid, kind of a tough kid, Barry Reese. And they're together. She said, don't worry about Barry Reese. I'm going to drive you there, and I'll take care of Barry Reese. So she drives me over there, and I said, there she says, is that them? Yeah, that's them. She says, okay, let's go. I go out of my side. I say, David, she gets up. Barry starts to follow. She comes out. She goes, Barry, come here. She holds Barry, and I go, and I do the punch that she taught me. I said, David, come here. And I was up against the school door. I said, come here. Wacko. I gave him one right in the chops, and his teeth got bloody, and I loosened his teeth.
I like that you and your mom were going to rumble.
How about that? What a story. I don't know. I don't know if that puts me in a horrible light.
See, it makes your mom sound wonderful.
She was great, wasn't she?
She sounds like just a tremendous person and somebody who had a rich life as a mother and a family member and then had her own rich life. So Sarah Silverman's on this record.
Oh, yes.
How did she get involved?
Oh, she's great. I've known her. You know, when I hosted Saturday Night Live, she was there as a writer in the mid-90s. We've been in touch with each other ever since. She was pals with Gary Shandling, as was I. Let's see. And then we did a couple of things together, a show or two. And then she does a special show at Largo. And she asked me, I think one time, to be part of that show. And I said, hey, I do this song that I learned for a charity event with somebody else that's taken from that Sammy Davis, Frank Sinatra version of Me and My Shadow that they did together. That's recorded. Let's learn. I know the one part. If you learn this other part, maybe we could do that. She learned it. If you go on YouTube now, you could find us at her apartment rehearsing it for the first time before that occasion. And we learned it then. And then when Larry Klein and I, when we were talking about who could be guest singers like we have at Rockwell sometimes, he said, oh, yeah, I think we should do that on the album too. I said, how about Sarah Silverman? Yes, I love her. And it could capture that not only musicality, but fun too. Maybe the two of you could, you know, converse in a way that might be cute. And besides sing, and we all got together at my house, the three of us. And in my little back guest house, where I have a little keyboard there now. And we ran through it a couple of times. We altered the novelty lyrics that occur a couple of times that I had an idea or two about. And the next week, we did it. That was it.
What track on the record, not your favorite, but is the one you like to listen to the most?
Well, it's just come out, so I haven't really been listening
you
to it.
You haven't listened to it?
No. I mean, I...
Which one's the most fun to perform? How about that?
Oh, yeah. Because I play it every day now. Because what we're going to do on the road is stuff from... I keep investigating that because really several of those songs were new to me. And at the time, you'll see if you see any footage of us playing, I'm kind of reading it off a chart and off a lead sheet, you know, and improvising from that. I know them now because I've played them every day and have investigated them more deeply. That's what you got to do. You got to keep playing them and seeing more things, that more possibilities, you know. And let's see, what do I like to play every day? And then we play them out and about. Oh, this morning we were playing this Charles Mingus song, Nostalgia in Times Square. I do like that. This is a song I'd never played before this album that Larry introduced me to. Marvin Gaye song that Don't Mess With Mr. T, it's called. Okay. And I had heard it. I'd known that soundtrack from Trouble Man, I do believe, where it appears, bah, 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 you know, Don't Mess With Miss Eve, very sexy, slow, kind of grindy kind of song. I kind of love playing that these days. Yeah, I like playing a bunch of them. This thing that Till Bronner does, I can't wait to see him again in Europe because he plays this gorgeous trumpet melody on It Never Entered My Mind to an accompaniment that I do and have now gotten a little better at that I love. And I like the way we did it on the album, too. Gee, that's a nice song. And if you know the lyrics to that, do you know the lyrics to that song?
No.
Oh, we don't sing it. He plays it, but I sing it to myself when I practice it. And I think about it now while he plays it, I'll bet. It's once I laughed when I heard you saying that I'd be playing solitaire, uneasy in my easy chair. It never entered my mind. Once you told me that I was mistaken, that I'd awaken with the sun and order orange juice for one, but it never entered my mind. You have what I lack myself, and now I even have to scratch my back myself. Once you warned me that if you scorned me, I'd sing the bachelor's prayer again and wish that you were there again to get into my hair again. But it never entered my mind. Isn't that sad?
That is sad.
I know.
Well, let's take a listen to It Never Entered My Mind from your new album, The Capitol Studio Sessions.
Thank you.
I'm speaking with Jeff Goldblum about his debut jazz album, The Capitol Studio Sessions, which is out now. You're listening to All of It. I'm Allison Stewart.
I like My Baby Just Cares For Me.
My baby just cares for me. Oh, she's great. Haley Reinhardt on that. Isn't that good? Mm. You know who did that originally? You got to look up kind of another version done by the great Nina Simone.
Of course.
We're doing a bit of an homage to an answer to something that she did in the accompaniment to herself on that. Yeah, kind of a bouncy D. And she did that. Yeah, so we're doing something like that. Yeah, I love that.
We're going to take a quick break and listen to your version of My Baby Just Cares For Me with Haley Reinhardt. I've been speaking with Jeff Goldblum about his debut jazz album, The Capitol Studio Sessions, which is out now. You're listening to All of It. We'll be right back after the break.
It's Haley Reinhardt.
Let me get you a
microphone.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Grazie.
Everybody having a good time? Well, good. Cool.
Haley Reinhardt. Haley Reinhardt.
Jeff Goldblum. Holy moly.
Molly.
Play me something sweet, won't you, Jeff?
What?
Can you play me something sweet?
Yeah, a D, a bouncy D.
Okay, cool. My baby don't care for shows. My baby don't care for clothes. My baby. He just cares for me. My baby don't care for the cars and races. My baby don't care for we'll have tone places. Well, his tail is not his style.
You're listening to All of It. I'm Allison Stewart, and we're back with Jeff Goldblum talking about his debut jazz album, The Capitol Studio Sessions. And coming back from the break, we played Don't Mess with Mr. T from the new record.
What do you want people to know about this project of yours? What's important about it?
Well, it's important. It's been important to me in that it's just really evolved out of a deep seed of passion and adoration and ecstasy that I've had in myself from forever, for a long time now. And it's fun to have just, you know, it's the result of gardening, organic gardening, and never really wanting ever anything, but and I just love that. And I just have a blast doing it. And people, when they come and see us do it, seem to be happy to see us. There's that. And I love being able to, you know, Larry says that some, and I think some of the people who for one reason or another come to this record and to our shows are not necessarily jazz first interested types, but get introduced to jazz and maybe importantly for people in the jazz who have devoted their lives to jazz and whose songs I'm introducing and other musicians that I'm, you know, they're getting a chance to see. It's important for them to see this gorgeous American music. I think that's not unimportant. And then unpacking further outwardly, maybe in this world of complication and mental anguish, there's nothing like music and a joyful music. And authentically felt music, and a shared music, and a shared experience through music that is such an effective tonic.
And also, I'm taking from this conversation is hold on to your passions. It's just because they're not how you make your living, or it's not something you do for other people. It's something that you love.
Yeah.
Just keep it in your life.
Yes, I think that sounds wonderful. That sounds wonderful.
Before I let you go, be a proud dad. Tell me about your kids. You're a dad in your 60s.
Yes, I am. Yeah. Well, I adore my kids. Charlie Ocean Goldblum. And I say, what's your name? He says he likes to play fireman. And I say, oh, I don't know how we got into this, guys. I've fallen down. He goes, ding, ding, ding. He kind of comes on. I go, yes, I hear the ding, ding, ding. Well, what's your name? I think I know that helpful sound. What's your name? He goes, Charlie Ocean Goldblum. I go, oh, you can help me. And then he helps me up. Da-da-da-da. So he's Charlie Ocean Goldblum. He's 3 and some months now. And the other one is River Joe Goldblum. And I guess they could jettison, if they wanted to, the Goldblum at any time. I thought those names, if they wanted to be River Joe, come on, that's pretty good. Or Charlie Ocean.
Pretty yeah. good.
Not bad.
Not bad.
Yeah. Or I said to Emily, my wonderful wife, I said, you know, we could give them 10 names to start. Here's 10 ideas, because I was making lists, in fact. That's why I asked you. And I said, here are 10. You pick one. You know, go with any of these that you, and keep changing it if you want. She said, no, that's not. She's a more traditionalist thinker. You'll confuse them. But anyway, so I like their names, and they are just too adorable. Haley Reinhardt, who sings My Baby Just Cares for Me, did a cover version of a bunch of 60s songs. And one of which is that thing from Blind Faith, Stevie Winwood. Come down off your throne and leave your body alone. Somebody holds the key. I love that song. I listened to it, and he was on my lap, and I said, oh, listen to this song. I started to cry. I got very emotional. I don't know why. I think I'd first heard it with my brother, who passed away when he was 23. In any case, and I love the song, and the way she sings it is great. He said, Dada, what is it? I said, I'm crying. It's such a sad song, but it's sad, beautiful. It's such a beautifully sad song. He went, oh, Dad. And then he just wanted to hear it again and again. Maybe he wanted to see me cry, keep crying or something. And oftentimes he'll go, let's hear that sad song. Or I'll play another song and he'll say, is that a sad song?
Aw.
I know.
They're so sweet.
They're so sweet.
In this world where things are so sour and toxic, little ones are just so sweet.
Oh, you're telling me.
Jeff Goldblum, it was a pleasure to have you.
My pleasure.
Thank you for coming and chatting.
Thank you so much.
I feel like we just hung out for a long time and just talked about music and life and family and stuff.
Me too. Let's put on our PJs and order pizza.